I had a conversation last week with a woman who worked in Austin, Texas, with an organization helping people who were suffering from sickle cell anemia. In the conversation, she said that her whole purpose to her involvement was to reduce suffering. And her comment was the spark that turned into today's talk. So that's the topic, to reduce suffering. If you ask yourself what Jesus' efforts were all about, and, you know, there's going to be everything that we've heard over the course of our lives about why he did what he did and why he came and et cetera, et cetera. But one of the answers that you're liable to come to is that he wanted to reduce suffering. Just think, if Jesus had the goal of reducing suffering, why wouldn't people today who claim to be Christians have that same goal? In Christ's Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, Jesus talks about his resistance to what he felt were ridiculous rules and regulations, teachings and rituals that the Jewish leadership hierarchy was forcing upon the people that led to greater levels of suffering, not less suffering. And he couldn't reconcile the God he was hearing preached about in the temples that wanted his creations to suffer and be poor and in illnesses and hardship and so on. It didn't make sense to him. And this is even before he attained the level of Christ consciousness. Doesn't it seem today that we can see billions of people on the planet that are in tremendous suffering? You can look any country, any city, any area, and you're going to see tremendous suffering. And you're also going to see tremendous examples of a few people who have extraordinary levels of comfort and power and money and influence. When I was growing up, this idea was the consideration of the haves versus the have-nots. But this imbalance, this one group not suffering at all and one group suffering tremendously, oftentimes at the hands of the group that is not suffering, it can be really disturbing. And we can see that maybe our goal today has to be to reduce suffering. If you look at and listen to the politics in any country, and right now, obviously, the United States has got a lot of stuff going on, and I know I've talked to people in Europe and elsewhere that are paying particular attention to our politics. Why? Because our politics will result in greater suffering or less suffering around the world. You know, the old idea that if America sneezes, the rest of the world gets a cold. It's still true. So if you look at what's going on and you listen to these conversations of politicians and just consider for a second if the idea of reducing suffering is at all on the table when they speak or if it has no relevance to them at all. Before and during Christ's lifetime, the Jewish priests were devoted to their own comfort. There's no new news there. They wanted more power. They wanted more influence. And the way they ensured that was to dictate all the hoops that their followers had to jump through in order to placate this real punitive, scary, mean God that was like a large man with an attitude. And that's the one they promoted. More suffering, not less, ensued from those points of view. And I'm thinking that's really why the need for Christ to show up on planet Earth was so great some 2,000 years ago. If you look at what has happened in these 2,000 plus years since Jesus was on Earth, you could look at Christianity and you'd go, wow, a tremendous amount of effort has gone into converting and controlling people, much more than into reducing suffering. Just think of all the different things that was going on. battling for political power. Early on, they were, you know, people who said, well, we should include this in the Bible. They were getting wiped out. They were getting killed off. So these tremendous political battles have been going on all the time. You might want to go back in time if you say, oh, wait, Cain and Abel. Wasn't that a political battle for influence and attention and more wealth? And yeah, you could. That low-level vibration really is part of the ego consciousness, human consciousness, that we've been trying to overcome forever. And Christ would have given us a good leg up by making it very clear what our alternatives were. So looking at the last 2,000 years of Christianity, and I'll say Roman Catholic Church, you look at the Spain and the Church in their efforts in the New World, right? You're going to see wholesale slaughter, destruction of entire cultures, the cruelty to unbelievable lengths. And they're not the only ones that were guilty of that. You can find that any place too. But that activity, the conquering of the New World, had been labeled in various ways, one of which was sold in history books as they wanted to civilize the peoples in the New World. Really? I don't think so. Here's what they wanted. This is more likely to be the truth. They wanted to take anything and everything of value that the New World held. Right? Reducing suffering of these people somehow got overlooked in the frenzy of the conquistadors raping, pillaging, plundering, and they were plundering gold and precious stones, silver, and other resources, kind of like what we're doing today with oil and other things, other mineral resources, copper, tin, that are valuable to us. There's no difference. We weren't interested in reducing suffering then, and we're not interested in reducing their suffering today. We're interested in increasing our own comfort. If you look at Latin America today, you're going to say, wow, there's still an extremely high level of suffering. How is that possible? How is that possible? These imbalances were built into the system. I would say this overall effect over the last 500 years in Christianity and Brazil and the rest of Latin America, you go, has suffering increased or has suffering decreased? I think if you went to native peoples in the Amazon, for instance, you'd go, since you people arrived, it's been nothing but suffering. Nothing but suffering. I think this is inevitable conclusion that the Catholic Church has always been a political organization run by people primarily concerned with their own comfort and power. I was flipping through channels last night. I didn't watch it, but there's something about the Borgias. The Borgias were really in control of the Catholic Church for a period of time during the Renaissance, and they were wiping out people that opposed to them. One of them is one of my favorites, Girolamo Savonarola, a priest who made a point of saying, you guys are really, really corrupt. This is not the way Christ wanted it to be. And so he was tolerated for a while. In the end, he was killed with the slight things called torture, hanging, and being burned to death. That's how they resolved that thorn in their side. If you look what's going on now, I'm thinking of Cardinal Bernard Law. I remember some years back reading, he was a real mover and a shaker and real power in the Catholic Church. Trouble is, in the area of Boston that he was, or that area that he was a cardinal in, there was tremendous amount of child molestation, and Cardinal Law was instrumental in moving the predators from parish to parish without dealing with the issue. He is a powerful guy in Rome now. They protected him by extracting him from the mess he allowed to and even contributed to in Massachusetts, and they stuck him in the hierarchy over there in a life of comfort. The Catholic Church, being devoted to its own organizational power and growth, was true years and years ago, hundreds of years ago, and it's true again today. There's no other way to explain the disgraceful handling of the priests molesting children throughout the world, Ireland, America, Holland, elsewhere, and having it swept under the rug. Protecting the priests, protecting the organization, but not protecting the people. Not being concerned with reducing the suffering of the people. To me, it's horrific. So I talked about Spain and Spanish and the conquistadors in the New World, but let's recognize that the British didn't want to be outdone by the barbarism of the Spanish, and they have most of Africa. Take a look at Africa today and go, ooh, there's evidence of the British impact on them. All that will civilize these people. Look at it. Africa is in tremendous turmoil, contributed by the European powers, primarily the British. Unbelievable levels of suffering back then and now. You look at Asia and parts of it, India, for instance, China, and elsewhere, and you're going to see the signs of the effects of the English, the French, Portuguese, Dutch. Those predators and a lot of that activity under the guise of religious support and, oh, we're going to help them, we're going to help them, we're going to civilize them, we're going to upgrade their cultures, all created more suffering in those territories. It was never about reducing suffering. Well, it certainly wasn't about reducing suffering of the many. It was about increasing the comfort and the power of the few. It was true back then. It's true today. I lived in multiple cities in America: San Diego, Houston, Kansas City, New York, Florida, like Naples and so on. And you say, you know what? You can see police cars. And those police cars have decals on the side of them. And besides identifying the specific types of police, you know, sheriff, state trooper, local police, you can see the locale that they are working in. But you're also going to see, and I remember seeing this in San Diego, their motto: to protect and serve. Really? Really? Who's being protected and who is being served? Now, the average citizen would say, well, me. Isn't it me? I don't think so. When you start scanning that and you recognize it near the end of the month when more traffic tickets are given out because of the need to prove that a policeman is actually doing his job and to gain the revenue from the fines that are going to result, you go, oh, they're not actually protecting me and they're not really serving me. They're protecting and serving their own interests and the interest of a few. Yeah, exactly. One of the things that's happening in the world now with this balancing of flow of information, not so few people control the information, even though media is concentrated in a few hands, but the internet has been a great equalizer. So a lot of people can speak and move their information into the internet, and a lot of people can receive it. So now all of a sudden there's this network, if you will, this circulatory system of information over the internet that makes what people are actually doing more obvious. And it becomes very obvious who is being protected and who is being served. And it is not the average person. As an example, I just read a recent article over the internet about a lobbyist in California. He's a lobbyist for the police industry, and he advises police unions on how to keep up political pressure to make sure that there is no change in marijuana laws. He wants to make sure it is not decriminalized. You know why? Because as long as there are laws that say people that smoke marijuana or grow marijuana or possess marijuana are criminals, then there are jobs for the police. Not only that, this guy not only encourages that political pressure, but he knows how to work the system to get grants from the federal government so local police forces can get money to hire more people, to buy more equipment, to hunt down these terrible, terrible criminals who are involved with a naturally growing plant. They're not about protecting and serving us. They're about protecting and serving their own interests, their own jobs, their own careers, their own comfort. Wouldn't it be amazing to see the sides of those cars now, to maybe with a red line through to protect and serve, or to have that slogan replaced entirely to reduce suffering? Can you imagine if the police were walking around, driving around, moving around with the intention to reduce suffering? Instead of following laws created for the benefit of a few, which to raise revenues to support those few, we would have a much more noble calling. That's the same calling that Christ had, to reduce suffering. If reduced suffering were the orientation of medicine in the United States, the medical industry, or the pharmaceutical medical industry, or the pharmaceutical medical hospital industries, do you think an oncologist would be recommending drastic treatments of chemo, surgery, and radiations to an 85-year-old patient? I don't think so. So those decisions, what are they based upon? How is that person coming to the decision to make these kind of recommendations? For money? Because those procedures cost a lot of money, and it's a great way for an oncologist to earn revenue. And secondarily, they're looking to avoid censure from their hierarchy. So, you know, like the Roman Catholic Church has been around for 2,000 years. So what is the similar organization in medicine? It's the American Medical Association. That is kind of like the Catholic Church of Medicine in the United States, trying to squash all competitors and increase its power and influence. That's kind of scary, kind of ugly, isn't it? It's committed, as most organizations are after a while, unfortunately, they're committed to their own existence, no matter how much suffering it costs to the congregation / patients / members. Look at the American Dental Association or the American Cancer Association and many others. After a while, can't you see that they become more committed to their own growth and not the growth of the individuals they claim to serve? The American Dental Association has known over 100 years about the dangers of root canals, and they squashed this information because root canals are a moneymaker. They're a moneymaker. There's been battles for years now about putting mercury in fillings into the mouths of people, mercury being one of the most toxic substances to life on the planet. But it's a moneymaker. It's a moneymaker. And the symptoms of those two procedures are a moneymaker for the medical industry. You just go, whoa, whoa. Reducing suffering? It's not what it's about for those folks. It's like the Susan G. Komen organization recently, right? Their political agenda was exposed. They were trying to, in theory, they help women. In reality, they made political moves that were brought to light over the internet because a board member was totally opposed to a blatant example of disempowering women. That is, instead of reducing the suffering of women, they were going to remove funding for Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is, in my opinion, one of the foremost organizations devoted to reducing suffering in women. Now, why would we want to reduce support to a group that is reducing suffering in women? Because women don't matter to one political party in this country. The war on women, not reducing suffering of women, but the war on women is one of the unspoken battles going on right now in America. Well, maybe it's not unspoken, but it's below the surface because we find other enemies that easier to promote. Immigrants, blacks, Hispanics, Muslims, on and on and on. The concept, reduce suffering. I'm thinking when organizations begin, that is a concept. That is a good idea. That's what people buy into. And then add a few more people, add a few more people, and that gets pushed down on the list of importances, and survival of the organization becomes foremost. That becomes the primary goal. And the lust for power and the greed for money takes over for these organizations. No matter what country you're in, and it's easy for me to speak about the United States because it's so obvious every day, but imagine if our political parties had as their agenda reduce suffering. Wouldn't that be amazing? Can you imagine that? Reduce suffering. Okay, guys, how do you plan to reduce suffering? And it was like, it would be fantastic. It would be fantastic. This Christian country would be aligned with Christ, which you would say, gee, that should be a given, right? Yeah, it should be a given. But it's clearly not. What if most businesses start, and this is a fundamental issue and a fundamental idea to business, find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. And you go, that makes sense. Create something of value and deliver it to people. That makes sense. But isn't that filling a need, finding a need and filling it? Isn't that the same kind of idea as reduce suffering? I'm a little uncomfortable because I don't have somebody invents something and brings it to market, and it creates a greater level of comfort. It reduces suffering for an individual. If businesses could internalize that motto, reduce suffering, then now all of a sudden they would have some sort of a guidance system when they were dealing with customers, when they were dealing with their suppliers, when they were dealing with their help, when they were dealing with their management. Reduce suffering. Reduce suffering. That's the name of the game. That's the game we're playing, guys, is to reduce suffering. It would be fantastic. What if school teachers and administrators had that same orientation, right? That same guiding principle. Let's reduce suffering. Do you think they would be interested in abusing children? Do you think they would be interested in serving themselves so blatantly? I don't think so. They would be reducing the suffering in others. And what's very, very clear is most people, when they try that, love it. They love that feeling. When they do something they know they should do for another person, it feels great. It feels great. It's like, wow, I just got a reward for being kind, being generous, being compassionate, being supportive, being helpful. Exactly. And all this marketing, you get greedy, get more money, get more stuff. It's like, you know what? No matter how much stuff you get, if you're not doing something for somebody else that you know you should do, it's not going to work. You may turn and say, I got to get more stuff, kind of like an addict. But that junk doesn't really do the job. Individually, do you think for a moment that your suffering makes you more loving, more charitable, more successful, healthier, kinder, more fun to be with? Or does your suffering make you more self-centered, more self-pitying, less loving, more self-contained, less loving to yourself and others, for that matter, and less able or willing to discover and express your real potential? Does it cause us to collapse inside of ourselves? Suffering is way overrated. If Christ is right about divine consciousness's intention to supply the the items that he describes in The Truth of Existence in Letter 1 of Christ Returns reveal startling truth? Why don't we follow suit? If the divine thinks these 9 items are important to its creations, why wouldn't we want to cooperate? Why wouldn't we want to contribute to that process? Why wouldn't we want the divine to be working for us, in us, and through us to reduce suffering, to provide these 9 items? I'm thinking that if God wants to reduce our suffering by supporting our growth, by supplying our nutrition and nourishment, by delivering healing and our protection, our fulfillment of need, our work, survival, in a world of rhythm that is governed by the spiritual law and order, that is, the law of cause and effect. Simply put, we reap what we sow. Why don't we join in with that same cause to reduce suffering? If Christ thought reducing suffering was the right thing to do, and he knew it was the right thing to do even before he knew how to do it, before he became Christ, why don't we make this our own cause to reduce suffering? A great addition to a prayer to divine consciousness would be this. Add this to your prayer. See how this would work. Help me to know how to reduce suffering in the world, and help me to do it. That's it. That's it. Those couple of phrases. Help me to know how to reduce suffering in the world, and help me to do it. Instead of us being mired in our own suffering, we could start to draw upon the divine to change our beliefs about suffering, our needing to experience suffering, and our needing to cause it to other people and things. Changing our beliefs about suffering by reaching out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and asking for enlightenment is a guaranteed way to reduce suffering. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.